The title of the program today is Gender Equity in Science and Engineering, Our Own Worst Enemy. Are we our own worst enemy when it comes to gender equity?
I don't know. I guess we'll find out with talking to our expert today.
Right, because our expert today is Jenny Hunt from the Economics Department at McGill University, who wrote a very fascinating paper that I think debunks our normal theory that the reason women leave science engineering is you, Bill Hunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
So you're off the hook now, I take back every bad thing I said about you.
Doubt
it. On the air.
I doubt that you'll actually take it.
And off the air.
Yes, okay.
So I think that's going to be very interesting, and I think what makes this study unique, what you did that was a little bit different is you actually looked at women and the rates at which they leave in other professions and actually did a good control experiment, which is good.
That's exactly right. The earlier studies had no control, as you say. We can go into that in more depth later, but that's right.
Right. So good control experiments, and Bill is not the reason why women leave science and engineering. Next up on Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.
The DeSoto Hour Big Band Jazz Show comes your way each and every Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m. right here on 91.1 FM. WREK Atlanta, the student-owned and operated voice of Georgia Tech.
Hey! Ladies and gentlemen of Georgia Tech, July 24th, from 7 to 9 p.m., WREK Atlanta presents Chunklet Radio. Be prepared to hear the crappiest crap from one of the crappiest magazines in Georgia. Hear the Pagans, the Mirrors, Teenage Panzer Corps, and a bunch of other stuff. That's from 7 to 9 p.m. on WREK Atlanta, July 24th. Be there.
The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science, only funnier. I'm Pete Ledevis, and as always, I'm joined by my ever-effervescent co-host, a man who believes that supply-side economics is a half-pipe in Telluride, Colorado, Bill Hunt.
Good.
I pulled that right out of the base of the cerebellum right now. I had a good joke. I could just couldn't remember what it was.
I'll admit to that.
Yeah. Okay. So the title of today's program is Gender Equity in Science and Engineering, Our Own Worst Enemy. And it's based on some work that was done by Jennifer Hunt in a National Bureau of Economic Research paper entitled Why Do Women Leave Science and Engineering? And as we mentioned in the promo, we always thought it was Bill. But apparently not. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, our guest today is Jennifer. And you go by Jenny, right?
Yes, that's right. Hello.
Okay. Who, did a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering at MIT, got her PhD in economics at Harvard University, has had appointments at Yale University, University of Montreal, McGill University. You did something interesting at the International School in Geneva. What was that?
Oh, that was just, I just decided to add that to my CV. That's actually I'd call it high school, except that actually it's K through 12.
But it looks so impressive. International School of Geneva, worldly, refined, the product of...
Not
of
at all like us.
Yeah. Fine European boarding school. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. So we're very impressed by your background. And here's the thing. So have you always gone by Jenny? So, and I want to ask you this because we're going to talk about gender equity in places where there are lots of men. And certainly you should have the confidence to go by Jenny because of your background and pedigree. Very impressive. And frankly, we're lucky to have you on the program. But has that ever been a problem? I mean, because I have plenty of engineering colleagues who get treated like waitresses by some of their male colleagues, despite the fact they have very impressive backgrounds like that. Has that ever been a problem for you?
That I've been treated badly, or that, people haven't liked my calling myself Jenny? Which one did
well,
you mean?
Well, so, mainly both. I mean, so they might say, well, Jenny, she doesn't take herself seriously, and then suddenly I've turned into someone who doesn't think women should be in economics at all.
I have thought, actually, sometimes about the Jenny, but I've just always been Jenny, and so I couldn't quite see changing that at any given point. I would say that, actually, I personally have never felt I've had a problem being taken seriously, despite being often in situations with very few women. On the other hand, I'm not a very sensitive person, and perhaps I just didn't notice that people were not taking me seriously. That has its advantages, though. It means you just forge on, not knowing no one's taking you seriously. And
right. And trust me, being an academic, a thick skin is always
it's a good thing.
Right. I mean, you know, things that people say about Bill don't really bother him as well, but I believe we call that Asperger syndrome.
I cry in my pillow every night.
Do you really?
Yes.
You know
yes,
I don't mean it, Bill. You
right.
know
sure
you're
you
the butt of all my jokes.
Sure you don't.
Just, you were a foil. It's a
yes.
cheap stunt to engage the listeners.
Right, I can't wait until the end of the year where you string them all together for a minute. But go ahead.
But you realize I have the utmost respect for you.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
All right. So so let's begin, I guess. Well, let's actually begin with a relevant tidbit from Science in the News. So let's begin the program with
Science in the News.
And I am going to start with something anecdotal,
okay.
right? Oftentimes in Science in the News, we don't necessarily start with something that is a peer-reviewed research journal article. And that sometimes deals with the fact that we are also trying to, and we're going to do this on today's program, not just deal with science, but deal with the juxtaposition of science and society's view of this and things like that. And that involves sociology and politics and things like that. We actually got an email from one of our regular listeners who goes by georgepburdell@gmail.com. For those of you at Georgia Tech, George P. What is George P. Burdell? He's a fictional dude.
Yes.
Right. That's
and has been for 100 years.
For 100 years. You know, said, I listen to the show weekly, I must admit, and actually he's written it many times with very complimentary things. I enjoyed it much more when it was a science show, not a political rant. I've actually turned it off during the last two shows. Now, to Bill's defense, he wasn't here for the last one.
Right, right.
And, you know, sometimes that's going to happen. And sometimes we're going to deal with how society views science. And, you know, a political rant on the fact that we think most of Congress doesn't understand economics. I don't know if we're going to get into this with you, Leonard, Jenny. But, you know, that's something we've been talking about recently. But today's Science in the News comes from one of our favorite sources, the Science Times of the New York Times. So this was July 18th of just this week by Ken Chang, who writes a lot of articles for them, entitled First Place Sweep by American Girls at First Google Science Fair. As a budding inventor and scientist, Shri Bose, in second grade, tried to make blue spinach. I think I'd pay cash money for something like blue spinach. It's very feng shui.
Well, you're downing Red Bulls like it. There's no tomorrow, so you probably would eat blue
spinach.
All right,
so Jenny, I will apologize. It's grading senior design stuff this week, so I am on a caffeine taurine high. God only knows what's going to happen. So in fourth grade, she built a remote-controlled garbage can. That I would pay cash money for. In eighth grade, she invented a railroad tie made out of recycled plastic and granite dust, and that achievement got her the top 30 in a national science competition for middle school students. So more than 10,000 students from 91 countries entered the science fair that was Google's first. The entries submitted over the web were whittled down to 60 semifinalists and then 15 finalists who presented their findings to the judges at Google's Silicon Valley headquarters last week. Ms. Bo's research was named best in the age category 17 to 18 and best in show overall. Now, she claims that it's pure coincidence that the girls swept all the top prizes in the categories because all 15 finalists were great projects. But I think anecdotally that does say something, that women are achieving great things in science and engineering. So would you agree with that, Jenny?
I would, and I'd also mention actually a study that an economist called Glenn Ellison and some co-authors have done recently, which is that if you look at the girls who and the boys who do very well in national math contests, the boys come from schools all over the U.S., but the girls come from a very small number of high schools. And in his view, this shows that those high schools are doing something right. They bring out the true potential of girls, and we could be getting a lot more girls to perform at that high level.
So what, perhaps, are they doing at these schools?
That I don't know, and he doesn't investigate in his paper, but I think definitely that's something to look into. There's just a handful of schools that provide all of the top female contestants in these competitions. I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, a lot of people believe that women went into areas of science and applied science, which is what we're talking about when we talk about engineering, that supposedly had a clear, what is it, they're trying to pin this touchy-feely thing on women and saying, you know, they do things that help society. So biology here at Georgia Tech, we had Jennifer Kraft Levy from our biology department on a few weeks ago. Tons of women in biology, tons of women in chemistry, actually. The American Chemical Society points out that typically in any given year, it's slightly more than 50% of the undergraduate majors across the nation are women. That is true at Georgia Tech. And chemical engineering and biomolecular engineering have seen the same. In chemical engineering, we're typically between 30 and 45% women here at Georgia Tech. It does vary a bit. So I think they certainly do extremely well. So whatever it is we can do to turn women into basically what my 16-year-old daughter is, she's a nerd. She does not have a thick skin like you do, Jenny, though I wish she would develop that. Because everything, even like, hi, honey, how are you doing today? What did you learn at school? She just, yeah, I'm crazy.
That's just her being a teenager.
Yeah, okay. You know. But she is a nerd. I mean, she's interested in all things science and applied science and things like that. So I think that's really great. But despite that, women exit science and engineering, right?
Yes.
And that is that's sort of the basics of your study. So let's talk about that. I mean, let's start in with this study that you entitled, Why Do Women Leave in Science and Engineering? You know, what was the data set and how did you approach this?
Right. Well, I'll give you the background first and actually what motivated me to do the study. There haven't been quite a lot of previous papers looking at people who leave jobs in science and engineering and comparing the difference for men and women. But they had only looked, as you said earlier in the program, they only looked at science and engineering. And what they found generally is that either from data sets that have been gathered more generally for a variety of purposes or from their own specific surveys for this topic, they found that women, much more than men, said that they were having trouble combining their job and career with family, and that's why they had left science and engineering. But I immediately thought when I saw one of these studies particularly publicized, and actually all economists I've talked to all had the immediate reaction, well, surely that must be true in many other high-powered fields other than science and engineering as well. That can't be something unique to science and engineering. Many of these papers did portray this as being somewhat unique to science and engineering. In at least some respects, they thought that at least for academic scientists or people who are actually working in labs, that the nature of experiments requires longer hours or more unpredictable hours, and that they did seem to tie it to something specific to do with science and engineering. But my immediate reaction was, well, what about finance, for example, where there are extremely long hours, sort of Wall Street jobs, really almost any high-powered job you can think of is hard to combine with family, and that's not something unique to science and engineering. And so what I wanted to do is something extremely simple, really, but sometimes simple things can have a big payoff, is introduce a control group, exactly as you said. So the outcome that the original studies were looking at was what I'll call the excess exits of women from science and engineering. In other words, how much more women left science and engineering than men. Well, I wanted to compare that to excess exits in other fields and firstly see, was there actually any difference? Because one possibility is women leave science and engineering more than men. Maybe they leave everything more than men. Perhaps women churn around more because they have preferences that are perhaps harder to satisfy, and it takes them longer to find the ideal job. So one possibility is there's actually nothing to explain that although women leave science engineering more than men, they leave finance more than men, they leave law more than men. It could have been that way. So that was the first thing to check. And I found that, in fact, for engineering, there is something specific about engineering, that the excess exits of women are bigger in engineering than in other fields. that people with a college degree have.
And so let's hold that thought, because we need to take a break. So I don't want any spoiler alerts here before we talk about specifically what is different about science and engineering. But we're going to take a quick break. And if you're listening to us live Wednesdays, noon to 1, and have a question for Jenny Hunt about this very fascinating topic, by all means, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. We'll be right back on Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.
There's always a moment, the moment you decide to get involved, to get engaged.
This is my
American story.
When you teach someone to read, they have a sense of self-fulfillment.
Seeing family, friends fall victim to gang violence, drugs, it definitely made me want to serve.
There was a hole in the ground, and by the time we left, there was a house.
I realized that these kids were not getting a meal.
It is so easy to give back.
I don't have a lot of money to help people, but I do have something. I have time.
You can give any skill you have.
I see a great need in my community.
Just imagine how strong a society we could be.
This is Barack Obama. Every one of us has a role to play in making our communities and our country stronger. Discover yours. Help us continue to make a difference in the life of our nation. Go to serve.gov and find the opportunity that works for you. And this message is brought to you by the Corporation for National and Community Service.
Tune in every Tuesday from 8 to 9 for your weekly dose of punk rock with Radio Bomb, right here on WREK Atlanta, Georgia Tech's student-run radio station.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking with Jenny Hunt, professor of economics at McGill University, about her study, Why Do Women Leave Science and Engineering? And as we mentioned before the break, if you've got a question or comment about this field, by all means, give us a call if you're listening live Wednesdays, noon to 1, at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. So, Jenny, you were in the middle of describing the study.
Yes, that's right. So I should tell you a bit about the data first, and I'll return more to the findings. So I'm using data that under the auspices of the National Science Foundation, and what they did was for the 1990 and 2000 censuses, they took people who had answered what used to be called the long form. You may not remember this because there was no long form in the 2010 census.
Yeah.
It used to be that a certain fraction of people got a much longer set of questions. And they took from the people who respond to that long form that asks for education, they took all the people who said they had a bachelor's degree or higher, and then did a survey of a subsample of them. And they're particularly interested, in fact, in people in science and engineering. And for the full survey, they oversampled people who had studied science or engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I'm determining whether or not a person is still in their field is I'm using the question in the survey that asks, after asking the field of study in great detail of all potential degrees that you could have had, they ask, is the job that you're doing now related to the field of study of your highest degree? And you can say closely, somewhat, or not at all. And importantly, if you say not at all, they ask you why not, so why you're doing a job that's unrelated. And as I say, the first thing to check was whether there was anything to study once you compared with other fields. And for engineering, there definitely was. There's an unusual high female rate of exit from engineering, in other words, between your degree and the time of the survey in engineering compared to non-science and engineering. But there actually wasn't anything, in fact, to explain for science.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't anything unusual to explain there, but there was quite a big gap for engineering, and it was all from people moving into jobs in different fields. There's nothing going on in terms of women leaving engineering to not work, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a factor. And so having found that there was something to explain for the engineering field, then I began using the answers to the questions of why you were working in a field unrelated to the field of study of your highest degree to just get directly what did the people say. And the answers included the ones that have usually been given. So they did, one possibility you could say was, family reasons, you could give location, work conditions, and then you could give job promotion and pay issues. Mm-hmm. And what I found was really what I had expected. In science and in engineering and in all the other fields, there are more women than men saying the reason they're not in their field anymore is for family reasons. But it's pretty much the same in all those fields. And so when you compare them, there's nothing special about engineering, in fact. That's not an explanation of why more women are leaving compared to other fields. In all fields, women tend to leave more than men because of family reasons.
Right, but that's a general issue is what you're saying, right?
Exactly.
That's a more important priority for them. They tend to leave a particular job because of that. But what you're saying is there's no difference between engineering and, say, finance. Did that carry over to things that are female-dominated, like nursing or education?
Well, for the most part, I lumped all of the non-science and engineering in mm-hmm. together.
Okay, okay.
So...
Yeah, and that's okay. Yeah, so basically, given the substrata of the data, you can't really make a conclusion about that.
Well, no, I could. It would just be a lot more complicated to present the results, actually. Mm-hmm. What I did do is a very common, even though less common than the past, a very common field of study of highest degree for women with bachelor's degrees or more is education. Mm-hmm. I did check that this is still true if you drop education from the control group.
Oh, okay.
So that's the split I kind of did.
Okay, so at least non-education jobs, then it's true across non-technical fields. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, yes. So then what you're saying is, you know, women leaving because of family issues and things like that, that's general and not
right,
specific to engineering or science.
Exactly. Okay. And so the thing that really jumped out that wasn't general is leaving the field for reasons of pay and promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And for the engineers, this explained about 60% of the mysterious excess exits of women from engineering. Mm-hmm. It's that compared to other fields, they're more likely to leave for pay and promotion reasons. And so this puts a completely different slant on the whole problem, that it's not in some sense, female-specific issue,
mm-hmm.
Like the family. It's something much more closely related, directly related, really, to the job,
right.
And that really needs to be investigated further, which I did a little bit in this paper.
Hmm. So I'm kind of troubled by the result. How does the fraction of women leaving science engineering because of pay and promotion issues compare with the fraction of men leaving science and engineering?
That's a very good question. So as a matter of fact, it's actually very similar. And that's why the studies that had only looked at engineering or science and engineering concluded that it didn't matter, because the share of men and the share of women who leave engineering for pay and promotion reasons is the same. But in all other areas, women are much less likely to leave their job for pay and promotion reasons.
Okay.
So when you compare to other fields and you realize that generally women don't leave jobs for pay and promotion reasons, you realize that engineering is strange because they do leave at the same rates as men.
Because I was worried that if that wasn't the case, the conclusion would be, and Bill and I will be stretching into a lot of interesting conclusions today, I think, that may not be supported by the data. And thank you so much for saying before, the data are, you know, as an academic, data being plural. This is a pet peeve of everyone in this studio, and I'm sure it's one of yours as well. So datum. Data mm-hmm. point, that's the singular, but data is always plural. I was afraid the conclusion we were going to have to make is that, you know, women leave for pay and promotion reasons from engineering because a lot of times engineering, I think we could get abused by the management people. I'm gonna say it. I'm going to put it out there. Bill, am I way off base?
No. I mean, my experience, I had two different jobs in industry for getting my PhD. Your incoming salary was, you know, astounding to some extent, and then the pay raises were minuscule.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were people when I worked at Harris who'd been working for 15 years making less than incoming engineers straight out of
college.
Right,
so pay compression, right?
Yeah,
salary
compression was an issue. You know, so I think that's, you know, whereas from my friends that were in finance kind of things, it's, you start out a little bit lower than the engineers, but the pay bump is tremendous.
Because the people that often control those salaries are business people.
Right.
And that's just a complaint that we've had for years.
But, you know, to Jenny, did you get into it all, you know, whether or not people had selected the right profession originally? I had this great friend, Saul Rocklin, who said that the two most dangerous forces in this country are the mafia and high school guidance counselors. And so was it that they kind of got nudged into science or engineering, and it was like, well, heck, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, or I don't like the day-to-day of this, you know?
Well, I think you bring up a very good point, which is that people leaving their field isn't necessarily a bad thing. They may have been in the wrong field in the beginning, or it may just be at that time that it's now better for them to be in a different field. They'll be more productive at that stage in their lives, given the skills they've acquired. But I think that's particularly important for this question, because I would have actually expected to see fewer women leaving science and engineering than men based on that sort of speculation. So women, particularly if we're talking about engineering, women don't get that message in society that engineering is a great thing to go into. And so you'd think that the women who went into it to start with were the ones who absolutely loved it, who were really the best suited for it, I would have expected.
Right.
And so I could have imagined that you would actually not see many women leaving engineering, because the people who would have left never entered. And I do have some very interesting data, or rather questions that I can exploit in the survey that check on that a little bit. So there are these very nice questions that ask everyone who's working, what do you value in a job? And conveniently, the first possibility they can say is pay. There's a 5-point scale. How important is this to you? Pay. The next one's promotion. Then there's a whole series of other things, including what you mentioned before, contribution to society, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I can control for those to see. So, for example, it could be that for some reason, it's a bit hard to think of a convincing story, but it could be that women who go into engineering are ones who really care about pay and promotion for some reason, much more than the men that go into engineering. So they're setting themselves up to be disappointed. Wherever they were, they would be disappointed.
Right.
And so they leave. So that's why it's nice to be able to actually control for how much do you care about pay in a job, how much do you care about promotion. And that actually doesn't make any difference to this gap in the leaving rate. It does between men and women in engineering versus the other. It does actually explain a little bit of the overall gap between men and women leaving their field. It tends to explain a bit why women are less likely to leave their field if you consider all fields together, so ignoring whether engineering is special. So, for example, it is true that in this kind of survey, including mine, women are more likely to say that contribution to society is important. And in this particular case, people who say contribution to society is important are actually less likely to leave their field. So it does explain a little bit of the gender gap in leaving field in general, but it's nothing special about engineering, so it doesn't change the result at all about engineering. But that reassures me to some extent that it's not that women in engineering have different job expectations somehow from the men in engineering, and that's why they're leaving. And it's not so much because there's particular types of women that go into engineering.
So I think what our listeners are saying is what goes into these sorts of surveys. A lot of people think that, well, we'll ask them a few questions and see what falls out. There is a schema, there is a systematic approach to doing these things, making sure that the questions you have are self-consistent, right? If you've ever taken a survey and it looks like somebody asked you two very similar questions, they might have been purposely similar to double-check the self-consistency of the survey. But also what you're talking about is controlling for variables, right? Controlling for pay's not important to me, so, you know, that's not going to cause me to leave engineering, and what I contribute to society is very important to me. I would tend to believe contribution to society is more important for scientists and engineers in general, because it's not the pay.
Well, more so than somebody working at a bank ready to wreck the entire economy or something like that. It's just all, it seems to be more about money. I know a friend of mine who was an accountant and then an investment banker, you know, what he was making was a big deal to him because that's how you measured yourself against other people in the profession, whereas I could kind of almost care less.
Yeah, but you can look at patents, papers, talks.
Right, it's a different thing. But
right,
for him, you know, for him in the finance world, that's really it. What's your salary? How much are you making? How much are you worth? All these kind of things.
Well, I think that's why what you were talking earlier about the theory that women, or you seem to be saying that people are saying women don't go into science and engineering because they are concerned about these societal things. The surveys do seem to show women are more concerned about societal contribution,
right.
But then the trick is to convince them that you can actually contribute through science and engineering to society.
Well, I think what we see here is that there are a lot of women in biomedical engineering,
biology,
chemistry
engineering. Yeah.
And chemical engineering, less so in electrical engineering. And, you know, we're just happy to kill people in electrical engineering, you know, make a bomb, smart or dumb, and kill somebody with it. We're okay with that.
You enjoy that, don't
I'm
you, Bill?
A little bit extreme there. But, I mean, I think, you know, these professions or subsets where it's clear you're out there to make life better somehow for somebody, you know, I think that, you know, women are more likely to be drawn to that. Back to an earlier point you were talking about, there is a lot of effort down here to, you know, nudge women into engineering, you know, and sort of show them the opportunities, and more so than nudging boys into engineering. Well, I think we've got all these various programs. We talk about... He's looking at me like
is it
I'm...
nudge or is it just push off the cliff? They're
well,
very direct.
I mean, yeah, they are very direct. But, I mean, you know, there's, you know, some pressure there. And to what extent, Jane, do you think that some of the people go into it and then they go, oh, you know, this...
Well, I think that there may be people organizing these events and putting pressure, but I doubt that the girls' parents are putting pressure on them to go in, and maybe that's really what matters. I did incidentally have a reaction to your comment about the bomb, though. In fact, we haven't got into the reasons why I myself left engineering, but one of them, a very important, the main one actually does relate to what we've been talking about, which was the way I was interested in people, I would say. And I think one can say that I felt when I was doing electrical engineering at MIT in the 80s that people were very interested in people, but they were mainly interested in killing them.
Yes.
Whereas I was interested in helping them.
Right.
And that was actually a main reason why I left. Now, it was partly perhaps the place and time that made that seem more salient than it was, but there was a lot of interest in killing people, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
But electrical engineering does a lot of things, you know, MRI technology, you know, medical imaging, things like that. Doesn't kill people.
That's right, and I think actually that's why even then, within electrical engineering, there was actually a bio option, and a lot more of the more women electrical engineers than men did that option at that time. Somehow wasn't as interested in biology, so I didn't pursue that track. But exactly, I think I let this view that it was all about killing people influence me too much.
Well, I mentioned this friend of mine before that he was a on a different show, but he was an engineer production.
You have friends, Bill? I was not aware.
Well,
of that.
I call them friends. So I don't know what they call me, but he was a production engineer for General Motors in Huntsville, and that plant closed down, and now he's working for Redstone Arsenal, and you know they're making missiles that are going to kill people. He's tickled pink. You know, I mean, this is not. I don't think he's sleeping well. You know, knowing that he's making these bombs more efficient, these missiles more efficient.
So. All right, we need to take a break. I'm not even going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. But when we come back, I'd like to talk to you a little bit more, Jenny, about some of the other things that come out of the data from this study. And if you've got a question or comment for Jenny Hunt, who's talking about gender equity in science engineering, by all means, give us a call here at the studio if you're listening live Wednesdays noon to 1 at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. 404-894-2468. That's the Red Bull kicking in.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with Inside the Black Box. Science, only funnier.
Asian music.
The best.
Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. Join us for 50 Pounds of Rice with your hosts, Jay Walker and Winter.
So if you're interested, turn your dial to 91.1 and listen to the best Asian music this side of the Yangtze River.
Listen to The Longboard Show, playing 50 years of surf and instrumental rock every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on WREK.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we're talking with Professor Jenny Hunt from the School of Economics at McGill University about why women leave science and engineering. All right, so let's get to maybe one of the insights from the study that I actually saw in the form of somebody paraphrasing an article in Forbes magazine about this particular study that basically said, why do women leave science and engineering? Men.
That's right. So what I went on to do in this study, which we haven't talked about yet, is to say, well, there seems to be something different about engineering. Is it really to do with, for example, the nature of the work that you're perhaps more hands-on or more mathematical, or is it something like that? Or is it really just an extreme example of what male fields, male-dominated fields generally are like? And so what I wanted to find out is, if you compare fields that have similar percent men study, so before people go into the workplace, is engineering surprising compared to other fields similarly male? Now, it turns out you can't do exactly that because there aren't any as male as engineering, but you can extrapolate. And the ones that are a little less male than engineering have slightly fewer excess exits of women. The ones a little bit less male than that have slightly less and so forth. It's more or less linear. Each time you increase the share male, you get more women leaving. And it just happens that the fields with the most men are engineering. But once you know this whole relationship between increasing the share male and increasing the disappearance of women after the end of studies, you know that you're not surprised anymore by engineering. I'll give you an example. I felt a little guilty when I left engineering because it was so male-dominated. In fact, in my data, it's 94% men.
Yeah, and electrical frightening. There's no doubt.
I went to the very female field of economics, which is only 73% male, so I felt a little guilty. But in economics, we worry about not having enough women either. Mm-hmm. But in any case, but economics is actually, in terms of excess exits of women, it's actually right up there with electrical engineering. That was actually electrical engineering that's 94% women. They're actually about the same in terms of excess exits. So economics is a field that's quite high up in terms of excess exits.
So economics is higher on a fraction of women basis.
Because yeah, exactly. Of course, there's some variation, but economics is a field that also has very high excess exits. But pretty high. It's pretty high percent male. It's in the top third. Mm-hmm. And so that's just there is some variation, but that's just an example of a non-science and engineering field that has a lot of excess exits and pretty high male. So that's just an example.
Are you saying that the men are abducting the women and that's why they're leaving the I'm joking, but.
Right. Well, exactly. So I tried to dig more into it. So it seems as though the more male your field to start with, the more you lose women as you go along. And I also checked this incidentally that this phenomenon comes from losing women for pay and promotion reasons. So the more male your field, the more you lose women for pay and promotion reasons. And then I tried to ask, well, what is the percent male picking up? Is it? I mean, the most naive interpretation is women don't like men and they get tired of them and leave. That's what I was going for.
Yeah.
If you've met enough engineers, they're tools.
It's at least a little bit more subtle than that. So I tried to think of, well, what's correlated with being percent male? What might that be picking up? So one thing I thought is male-dominated fields, people may work very long hours, so maybe it actually indirectly gets back to the family issue. And although it does turn out to be true that male fields work very long hours, you can't explain the gap with long hours. Another thing I tried to get at was maybe for some reason women are excluded from or exclude themselves from managerial positions, and perhaps male fields are very hierarchical ones. And I have information about whether you supervise people or whether you supervise supervisors of people, so I can get a handle on how hierarchical a field is. And that also is positively correlated with the percent male, and also does not explain this pattern that we're looking at. And I also looked just as somehow. And this was just a crude proxy for how good the jobs are. It's true that the more male the field is, the higher the average wages, but that also doesn't, the average wage in a field doesn't explain the gap when you put it in a kind of horse race with the percent male. It's just the percent male that matters. And so I really need to go to other data. And this data, I can't tell, for example, at what stage in your career you left your field of study. And I need to go to some data that I have some in mind that I haven't analyzed yet. I need to go to some data that do allow that to be studied. But what we learned from this percent male thing, though, is that, and the reason I gave the example of economics, and there's also, I could give the example of financial management. That's also a pretty male field with pretty big excess exits of women. What we learn is that the answer can't be anything to do with equipment or hands-on work or labs or anything like that, because that doesn't hold for these other fields. And so really we're left with residual explanations, at least until I do this further research. So some of the residual explanations that are still plausible are that there's mentoring problems. Perhaps everyone needs a mentor, and perhaps your mentor is more similar to you. It works better. So that would be one explanation. I mean, another one, of course, is just the outright discrimination or the outright dislike, perhaps, of the culture of the workplace. This is actually something that the earlier studies, particularly the ones that really went into did surveys in depth, to analyze this very question, they talk about what they call the macho culture. Now, I did have a little bit of experience of this when I had some jobs before I switched to engineering. So, for example, in one summer job I had, when you turned on the Macintosh in the beginning of the day, it booted up. While it booted up, there was a naked woman on the screen for around 30 seconds. So that kind of thing.
What year was that? Because that's sexual harassment now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was also in Europe, I should say.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
30 seconds just didn't long
enough.
Was that
in France or Italy?
It was in Switzerland, cool. Actually. Although right on the border with France. It was actually at the European Center for Nuclear Research, CERN, which straddles the border between right. Switzerland and France.
Because I spent a lot of time in Zurich, and trust me, that would not be in the German part, where everything is in order and they wouldn't put up with that sort of stuff.
No.
They'll roll over the border and occupy your country, but yeah. no hanky-panky yeah. on the warm-up to the yeah. to computer.
Yeah, but so these residual explanations that I can't test directly are kind of left over after I've eliminated some of the others, and we need more studies to really go into those.
Let me ask you this. I mean, certainly my impression with engineering is that it is also predominantly a solitary activity. Now, maybe that's true in a lot of fields, but, you know, you tend to see men that are more likely to be loners than women. I mean, most of the detective novels, the detectives are men. There are a few women. And that's fiction. But there is a certain amount of just solitary confinement associated with engineering and science. And I think that would probably be, I would think that would be a factor to some extent. I guess the other question I had for you is what are, in your continuation with this research, what are some questions that you would add to the questionnaire?
Well, I would like to actually to go into more detail on, there is this question about did you leave your field of study because of working conditions? Well, that's very vague. I would like that decomposed a little more. Does working conditions, does that mean, you know, long work hours, or does it mean I couldn't stand my colleagues? That sort of thing, that would be nice to decompose. In the data I'm going to use, it doesn't have that, but what it does have, it has two other very important things. One is it follows people over time, which these data don't. It follows people over time, so I'll be able to look at, is this something that happens, for example, right, in principle, you could never work a day in your field of study, and in my, that shows up in my data just like somebody who worked 10 years and then left their field. Both of those are leaving your field. It would be nice to distinguish those. And then the other thing is this longitudinal data set that follows people that started in college, and it has all the information in college, like GPA in college and all this kind of thing. So it'll be you'll be able to see how the people looked before the workforce. Now, of course, that doesn't mean if we're testing discrimination, there may be discrimination in colleges as well. That doesn't mean there isn't any, but you'll be able to get, for example, the pure academic ability and see how that influences things, which will be very interesting.
I guess I'm holding up for the cultural thing. I mean, I don't think people realize how big of a cultural difference it is with engineers. I mean, we are tools. We're very different than the average person, right?
Yeah.
You know, flood pants, pocket protectors, run amok. I can't believe you didn't actually say, well, look, if you're going to have
a
screensaver.
Well, I think they said you can't get a pocket protector on a nice blouse. It's just impossible.
And we will
it's
be sending you, Jenny, we will be mailing you the official pocket protector and bumper sticker of the show.
Oh,
and
thanks,
a lot of women don't have those kinds of shirts, so it is discriminatory.
Well, you know, I still have mine left over from MIT days.
There you go.
I can fit it in.
We hope you'll wear it proudly. Yeah. Why didn't you suggest to the people that booted up the computers that they put, you know, some nice spread of George Clooney with very little clothes on?
Well, you know, that's exactly the thing. That's part of the problem. I mean, I think that's actually a good question, because the trouble is, obviously, I was the low person on the totem pole, right? I was the sophomore in college on the summer job, so that's when you can't say anything, and that's when potentially, I was rather obstinate, but other people might potentially get, turned off and say, you know, I don't want to deal with this kind of stuff. Another thing that happened to me, by the way, in that summer job is that at some point, some rather senior, actually scientist rather than engineer, I was working with the engineers, a scientist decided he didn't have enough secretarial help, and he kind of looked around, and he had a male sophomore physicist working for him, and then he saw me, and of the two of us, I think not coincidentally, he decided I would be the appropriate person to supplement his secretary in her work, so I was yanked off my productive engineering job to do photocopying and stuff for him for a while.
Yeah.
So
let's hope that's changed with time. And I think we actually have a caller in line.
Welcome to the program.
It may or may not be germane to your question, but the first guy that I worked for at DCA Glow these many years ago, he was he was an atomic engineer. That was what his master's was. And the secondary guy was an astronomer. He had a master's in astronomy. And they were both working for because that's where they could find work. Maybe a lot of those folks just couldn't find work anywhere else.
Well, that's right. Actually, you can see a big difference between people whose highest degree is in science and in engineering in terms of the share that are still in their field of study. And engineers, the more narrow the degree field, the more likely people are to still be in it. So, for example, if you take people who studied medicine, it won't surprise you to know almost all of them say they're doing something closely related. Engineering is only, for men and women, only about 10%. I'm averaging a bit the men and women here. Only about 10% say that they've actually left their field of study, whereas for science, it's more like 23-24%. So you're less likely, as you're pointing out with your story, to find a job closely related to your science degree than to your engineering degree.
That's true, apparently.
But that's actually one of the options they could give. Actually, I didn't give you all the options that they could give of why they were changing job. One is couldn't find work in field of study of highest degree.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Great.
But I would claim that's actually a good feature of science degrees, right? That if you get a degree in chemistry or physics, or certain engineering fields like electrical, mm-hmm. chemical engineering, you can do lots of stuff,
right?
We call this the quant phenomenon when I was in graduate school, that a lot of the MIT students would take a few classes at the Sloan Business School at MIT and end up applying the same modeling that they would do in economics or physics or engineering to commodities and securities pricing. And in fact, we had Tim Lee, who's a biologist who did population models for a while. And population models are valid for everything from population of organisms to money. And he applied them in a financial way as well before he gave the whole thing up and became a stand-up comedian. So I don't know what that says about Tim, but...
You're exactly right. I mean, having a broad education that can be applied to many things is a good thing. So this is another reason why it's not necessarily a bad thing not to be working in the field of study of your highest degree.
And let me just say, you know, given some of your anecdotal comments, that I hope things have changed a bit. A couple of years ago, we had Karen Panetta from the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Tufts University, who runs a program called Nerd Girls, where she gets girls out there and they participate in undergraduate research and do all this sort of stuff. And she has similar horror stories that she claims has changed. When she first started at Tufts as a faculty member, she said there was a guy bragging about the fact he'd been working on a proposal and hadn't slept or showered in 3 days. And that's bad. I mean, you know, granted, I work long hours, but that's just bad.
I don't think many women would be bragging about not having taken a shower.
But
I'm just throwing that out there.
Either.
Maybe I'm, you know,
men
wrong.
Shouldn't
yeah,
either.
Yeah. Keep that to yourself. Yeah.
Yet culturally, I mean, that's the thing. I think for a lot of men in engineering, their idea of good grooming and hygiene is spritzing themselves with Febreze every couple of days. So I don't know. Well, we have reached the portion of the program we like to call What Have We Learned? And we've learned so much stuff, I'm not even sure where to start from. One thing we've learned is that hopefully there is hope, right? And you mentioned this study by Glenn Ellison about girls coming from certain small groups, certain schools that appear to be doing something right. And maybe that manifested itself in the female sweep of the first Google International Science Competition. So I'm certainly hopeful.
That's why it'd be interesting to see if they're coming from the same schools, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the question is, what kind of schools do they come from? In fact, I think I'm going to be talking to the Google people about that very thing in the next few days.
Well, that's an excellent point. And I would think that, an aspect that I see in human behavior is you get clustering. If you've got a group of people where everybody's, you know, leveraging off of everybody else. There were very few people in Athens, in Greece, when you had Aristotle, Plato,
and Bill
Socrates.
Knows he was there, actually.
I was there, yeah. My hair was not gray at that point, but yeah.
And I think what we did see is an excellent illustration of how research into analyzing and interpreting data works, right? First of all, thank you for pointing out to our listeners that data is, in fact, plural. But also, you have certain hypotheses that, you know, family is important to women and that's why they leave. And you see that, but then you realize by teasing things out of the data that they leave all jobs for that reason.
Yeah,
and it's not something that's unique to engineering. And when we say teasing stuff out, I mean, we make it sound like, well, you look at the data and make a graph. And no, that's not it at all. You know, Bill was talking about clustering. And this no doubt involves lots of large covariance matrices and things like that with a lot of mathematics and analysis of variance and correlation and things like that. But you don't always know what it is. So you have a hypothesis, you look at this factor, that factor, and then you realize you don't have the right question. So that's really what you're in the process of trying to look at now, right? Trying to get the right questions?
That's right.
Right. And so what you basically realize is women aren't leaving engineering for that reason. They are leaving that reason. They're leaving all areas potentially.
All skills. We should interject a moment. We're only talking about people with college degrees or more. So that may be true for everyone, but I'm only looking at women with college degrees or more.
And they may leave professional wrestling for that reason as well, but we don't know. We need to look at that data.
That's right.
But there is something different
but
about...
But also, Pete and I have come to the realization that it's women just don't want to be around us.
We call it the Bill Hunt factor.
It took quite a few years to
That's another
that out,
study.
But
you do conclude that there is something different about engineering as well, right?
That's right, exactly. And the thing that's different appears to be opportunities for pay and promotion, which seem to be less favorable for women compared to men in engineering compared to other fields.
And you were able to exclude certain things. So working long hours... may not be the contributing factor. I'm trying to think, what was the other one that was...
Having hierarchical workplaces doesn't seem to be either. And just because the fact that it's percent male rather than something specific about engineering suggests it's also not something to do with really the nature of the work exactly.
Hands-on work is not it because economics and financial areas work that way as well. So the remaining hypotheses are, I want to say men are tools. Certainly engineers are. We're crazy. But you put it in a much more refined way that perhaps there are mentoring problems. There could be discrimination. And then I'll lump the men are tools and just, don't shower enough in the culture of the workplace.
Yes, that's right. Okay. I think those are the three main possibilities.
Yeah, I think if everybody in the office as a badge of courage didn't take a shower for a few days, women would leave in droves. They would just march
out. That may
be
the
next hypothesis.
They would march
out the front door, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess what I want to do point out is that very often there are simple things, simple correlations that people assume we have looked at, that you should look at, or someone has recently looked at, that we just haven't, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Right. And so as much as this seems like relatively simple analysis of this data, by simply using a control experiment, you actually came up with a very different conclusion than previous studies, and hopefully the continued work will actually tell us, is it Bill and I thinking that Febreze is a reasonable replacement for a shower, or is it just mentoring? And maybe mentoring is better related to these particular girls' schools that do well in science fairs. I don't know. But it's still important, despite the fact that it seems simple on the outside, it's not actually.
There's some complexity there.
Yeah. All right, can we leave anything else? Is there anything else?
I think that's it.
I'm asking
Jenny. Thank you.
I don't care about what I think. When I want your opinion, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
Is there any a big grand conclusion we left out of that?
No. I think you summarized it very well.
Okay. All right. That's good. Well, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you.
All right. And if any of our listeners have a question or comment about this program or a suggestion for a future show, by all means, send us an email at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. Our chief engineer is Trent Altman. Our theme music is composed and performed by Bill and Mary Hunt. And we are a production of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, science only funnier.